Hello and welcome once again, podcasters, to this series of podcasts in association with the Decade of Centenaries and Kilkenny Library Services. My name is Owen Swinton Welsh, and in these podcasts we take a look at different aspects of Kilkenny's War of Independence story during the year 1920. In today's episode, I thought we'd focus on what's known as the Dáil Courts. Now, I don't think it's an understatement to say that these were a phenomenon 100 years ago, that is, in the spring, summer and autumn of 1920. First things first, what am I talking about here? Well, if you were going to try to establish an independent republic, as many were attempting to do in 1920, you needed to take over the instruments that made that society work. Now, that all sounds very highfalutin, but if you think about it, by setting up the new Dáil Éireann Parliament in 1919, the followers of the Sinn Féin movement, which of course were a very broad church at the time with members from many different walks of life, were really saying, we will show you we can govern ourselves in a democratically elected parliament. This then trickled down to local level with the takeover of many of the county councils and rural and district councils by Sinn Féin in the 1920 local elections. The next logical step then was to try and take over law and order throughout the country. This was hugely important for two specific reasons. Firstly, it was grassroots, where people would see the new justice system in action in every corner of the country. Secondly, many within the Sinn Féin movement, such as local TD W.T. Cosgrave, were at pains to stress that there would not be anarchy if this new order took over the running of the state from the Crown. That was a legitimate fear for many ordinary members of the public. In a way, I suppose, they were showing that they could be trusted. So what was happening here was the establishment of what historians like to call the counter-state. This is a parallel state which basically copied all the official arms of the state people were used to, but with the key difference that they were under the command of Dáil Éireann government and not the Crown. In fact, they argued that the British state now had no legitimate mandate to be in the country and tried to ignore them as best they could. There were two ways Sinn Féin went about this. Firstly, the IRA volunteers around Kilkenny were instructed to set up a separate police force in their area. In practice, these were local lads whose job it was to act like policemen, basically a replacement for the RIC. They became known as the Republican Police or the Volunteer Police. Their establishment was especially important in the summer of 1920 to stop petty crime, as many of the RIC stations had closed down in rural Kilkenny. The second element is what we will talk about today. That is the establishment of a separate court system whose allegiance was sworn to Dáil Éireann and not the King. Now, we should try not to think of courts as buildings. It didn't really matter where they sat. Actually, Ken Loach's brilliant film, The Wind That Shakes the Barley, which in fairness is meticulous in its historic accuracy, in a way say that Michael Collins' film definitely isn't, shows a Dáil court in action really well. Trusted people were appointed judges. Because these courts were illegal, not to say treasonous in the eyes of the Dublin Castle administration, they were held in an array of venues throughout Kilkenny. Initially, before the arrival of the auxiliaries, the courts were held in very public buildings, such as the Town Hall in Kilkenny City, you might know as the Tolsel, in May and June of 1920. Here, the Sinn Féin Mayor Peter de Lucri acted as a judge. There was also cases heard in the Town Hall in Callan. However, with the arrival of the auxiliaries, extra black and tans, and increased military later in the summer, the Dáil courts were pushed underground. They were held, for example, in people's houses and even in an abandoned blacksmith's forge in North Kilkenny. Just before we take a look at some of the court cases, I should mention that Kilkenny folk were used to more localised administration of justice back in 1920. There was a Crown courthouse in each district. For example, where I'm from, in South Kilkenny, the district courthouse was in Piltown, with many cases from the parishes of Monkhine, Piltown, Kilmacow and Hugginstown usually heard there. These courts typically sat quarterly and dealt with smaller offences, such as not having lights on your bike, but most often cases were drunken disorderly offences or low-level violence cases. These local courts were absorbed into the district court system later in the 1920s, so it's something we wouldn't really be used to today. And just one other thing to note, I use this term Dáil courts to define this new court system of 1920, as they received their authority from Dáil Éireann, but they are often recorded in newspapers or in official records under different names, such as Sinn Féin courts or volunteer courts. If anyone out there actually has any of the court documents related to the Dáil courts, please let me know. Perhaps a family member was a judge or something. By their nature, these courts were clandestine, so it's a rarity to find any official records. We do have accounts, though, from the people involved in administrating these courts and also from local newspapers. First, let us take a look at a case from Muckalee, which was reported on the 31st of July 1920. It gives a good flavour of the type of offences heard in these local courts, how justice was then administered, and how so-called respectable people came on board quite quickly. A trial by a volunteer court took place last week in the parish of Muckalee. The prisoner, a labourer aged about 60 years, was arrested on the charge of stealing a gold watch and chain, the property of a gentleman who was enjoying a brief stay in the country. The facts of the case appear to be that the watch and chain were lost and a reward of £3 was offered for their recovery. The articles were subsequently traced to the labourer's cottage occupied by the prisoner, a married man with a large family, and a visit to the house by the volunteers from Coombe District resulted in, it is alleged, in the recovery of the stolen property. The man was immediately taken into custody and conveyed to another part of the district in which his trial took place, and every opportunity was afforded for his defence. The accused was convicted and fined £5. On Sunday, he was paraded in front of the Muckalee Chapel. The prisoner was compelled to stand in full view of the chapel gates with the word thief printed in large letters on a paper attached to his coat. Having gone through this humiliating ordeal, the prisoner was allowed to depart, a genus and cart being in waiting for his conveyance home. Prior to his release, he was warned by the leader of the volunteers as to his future conduct and was discharged with the solemn injunction, "Go and sin no more." The volunteers were warmly commended by the priest of the parish on their clever capture. End quote. So we can see by that account, the speedy apprehension and recovery of the stolen goods was very much appreciated by the locals. Because the Dáil courts had no prisons per se to send people to, the shaming of people at the local church was a common additional punishment, which of course wouldn't have occurred under the old system. The swift administration of justice with the extra punishment of being humiliated in front of your local peers was one way the new court system became popular, although the accused in question would probably have preferred the old system. Up next, we have reports of cases from Callan. The first report here is from the 29th of May 1920. Remember, this is just after many of the rural RIC stations had closed. The auxiliaries in black and tans had yet to arrive in force. The regular RIC who were based in Callan mostly confined themselves to their barracks. For them, at this particular point, it was not worth the hassle in attempting to stop these Dáil courts. They had little backup, and generally the public seemed to be in favour of them. So in many ways, the Sinn Féin supporters had a free run in setting up these courts in May 1920. So here's the report from Callan. A Sinn Féin court has been operating in Callan during the week, and several cases were decided. The parties who appeared before the court loyally accepted its decisions, and where fines were imposed, they were promptly paid. On Tuesday, the court was occupied in investigating a charge of the larceny of a bicycle. The owner of the bicycle and the accused both hail from Tipperary. The accused was arrested by a patrol of Callan volunteers who marched him through the streets direct to the town hall where the court sat. The owner identified the bicycle and other witnesses gave evidence for the prosecution. The accused pleaded guilty, but witnesses were examined as to the character and extenuating circumstances, and the court, taking these circumstances into account and the fact of it being his first and only lapse, a term of imprisonment was imposed with the alternative of a smart fine, which was promptly paid, the accused being then liberated. Three or four arbitration cases were also heard and a decision loyally accepted. On Thursday, the court sat to hear a rather important case in which two ex-soldiers were charged with the larceny of a gun. One of the accused has been captured and is under arrest, and the gun has also been recovered. Further investigations will be held before the court announces its decision. End report. Another report from Callan was recorded just a week later on the 5th of June 1920. Callan Sinn Féin Court has been kept very busy since it began its sittings, and its utility in the punishment of delinquents, suppression of crime, particularly in the form of larceny, and the adjustment of disputes is generally recognised. Stolen property has been restored to its owners and punitive measures enforced against the guilty parties. As regards the criminal charges, the accused parties who were arrested by the volunteers and brought before the court where they got every opportunity of defending themselves. In one case, two ex-soldiers were charged with the larceny of a gun from a respectable farmer. The accused, in whose possession the gun was found, was arrested in the parish of Dunamagan. He was brought before the court and convicted and was ordered to keep out of the parish and not to be seen there for at least 4 months. It appears that he sold the gun to another man who was also an ex-soldier who paid 9 shillings for us. The latter tried to dispose of the gun for £1, but before he succeeded in this, he was taken into custody. On being convicted, he was fined £2, and the fine was at once paid. He would have been more severely dealt with, but the consideration was given to the fact that he was partially incapacitated owing to a wound he received in the war, and that's of course the First World War. The court up to the present consists of 6 members. 2 of them are merchants of high standing in the town, 2 others are respectable farmers in the parish, and the remaining 2 members of the court represent Labour and have shown the greatest intelligence and independence in the discharge of their duties. Callan Sinn Féin Court is entitled to the confidence of the public. Its proceedings are conducted with all necessary but no unnecessary dignity. The letter of the law is not allowed to strangle the spirit of justice. Its decisions have given the greatest satisfaction and are loyally carried out. End report. And I should say that report was from the Kilkenny people, which was very supportive of the Sinn Féin movement. But it also shows how the court was set up with 6 members of the local community made up as members who would dispense the justice. Dáil courts were also held in Castlecomer during the same week. Here is a report from the 5th of June 1920. Much annoyance has recently been caused to several residents in the district of Gorteen near Castlecomer, where fences have been levelled, gates and doors broken and windows smashed, Protestant inhabitants especially being victimised. Finally, the matter became such a nuisance that the Sinn Féin Club in the district decided to take action in order to vindicate the rights of the people, no matter to what class or religion they belonged. On Saturday night last, 8 men were arrested by the volunteers and brought before the Sinn Féin Court, held in a forge commandeered for the purpose. Evidence was given to connect the accused with the charges made against them, and the accused were also allowed to produce evidence, an advocate being assigned to them. Finally, all the accused pleaded guilty, except one, in whose case the evidence, which was of a circumstantial nature, was not sufficiently strong to justify conviction. The 8 accused who pleaded guilty expressed sorrow for what they had done and promised never again to offend against the public interest. 6 of them were fined £2 each and one 25 shillings. In some cases, the fines were paid, and in other cases, time was allowed for their payment. The action of the Sinn Féiners in taking effective measures to safeguard the inhabitants against annoyance of the kind complained of has met with general approval. End report. The courts were even busier in July 1920. Here's a report from the 3rd of July. Republican courts have been functioning in various parts of the county, adjusting disputes, punishing culprits, and generally re-establishing genuine law and order. A notable instance occurred in Kilmarnock District, illustrating and maintaining the principle of civil and religious liberty. Recently, the lock of the Protestant graveyard was broken and the door of the Protestant church injured. The outrage shocked the sense of justice of the Catholic inhabitants of the district, who live on the most amicable terms with their Protestant neighbours. Sinn Féin set to work to exact reparation, and suspicion attached to a certain resident in the locality. He was promptly taken from his dwelling after a feeble resistance, and summary justice was dealt out to him. He confessed to breaking the lock but denied the other charge. He was brought before 2 of the principal Protestant inhabitants, confessed his guilt and humbly apologised, and undertook to repair the damage. The leader of the Sinn Féin party, addressing the 2 members of the Protestant community, said, "The British government is powerless to protect your civil and religious liberties, but they are safe under the regime of the Irish Republic. The Republic will see that no citizen of this country suffers injury, either in his person or his property or his religious belief, without adequate measures being taken to safeguard him. And if such injury is inflicted, prompt and punitive justice will be enforced." The 2 members of the Protestant community thanked the Sinn Féiners for their solitary action, promised to report the matter to the clergymen of the parish, and finally interceded for the culprits, who now realises the stern effects of the Republican justice. A Dáil court sat recently at the evacuated police barracks in Callan. 2 bullocks recently stolen from the lands of Paula Capel were traced by the volunteers. They had been sold, but the purchase money was restored to the owner and the culprits adequately dealt with. A horse belonging to Mrs. Griffin of West Street, Callan, had to be shot recently owing to injuries wantonly inflicted by 6 men, including 3 ex-soldiers. Another horse belonging to the same owner was subjected to gross ill-treatment. The men charged with the offence were arrested and a midnight trial was held. They pleaded guilty. Heavy fines were inflicted, which they agreed to pay in instalments. Meantime, a committee has been formed to raise funds to purchase a horse for Mrs. Griffin, a hard-working and deserving woman whose livelihood depended on the money she received from the hire of her horses. Many of the cases in the Sinn Féin courts were somewhat surprisingly initiated by unionist members of the local community. In Callan, one of the first cases heard was brought by Major McAlmont, who owned the large Mount Juliet estate near Thomastown. Of course, his former home is now a very famous hotel and golf course. His case was against a farmer from whom he had purchased a bull calf. The animal had not been castrated, which was part of the sale agreement. McAlmont won his case in the court, with the seller having to fulfil his original obligation. The fair and balanced manner of the Sinn Féin courts was a publicity bonus for Sinn Féin locally. However, it was inevitable that the Crown Force authorities would hit back. This happened from the autumn of 1920, especially after the auxiliaries had arrived in Kilkenny, with the result that the courts had to take place in secret, but many just stopped altogether. The Republican policemen who were involved in the arrest and detainment of prisoners were now targets of the Crown Forces. For instance, Dennis Butler from Cotterstown on the Hugginstown Ballyhale border was arrested by auxiliaries after leaving Sunday Mass in Hugginstown. He was one of the Republican policemen who guarded over two detained prisoners named Cody and Burke, who had been imprisoned in a house for 4 days for the crime of stealing money owed to the local parish priest. Unfortunately for Republican policeman Dennis Butler, Cody recognised his vice, as he had previously thrown him out of a local pub for being drunk and disorderly. Butler was eventually arrested in 1921 and sentenced to a year imprisonment with hard labour. No doubt the Crown Forces were stamping their authority on the situation in Kilkenny, implying that they were the only law enforcement in the land. The Hugginstown situation had a near fatal consequence for one young man named Joseph Halloran, who was shot during one of the many house raids that occurred in the village. It was reported as follows. The latest sensational news from Hugginstown is the shooting and wounding of a boy named Joseph Halloran, aged 19. The circumstances, as related by some of the residents, go to show that recently the volunteers effected the arrest of two men, ex-soldiers, on a charge of being concerned in the robbery of a substantial sum of money from the local parish priest. A number of auxiliary police arrived in the district from Hugginstown at frequent intervals and notified the residents that if these two men were not immediately set at liberty again, Hugginstown would be burned down. On last Sunday night, a large number of those forces called at Hugginstown and visited the house of Joseph Halloran, a farmer who has two sons at present on the run, and for whom they inquired. They seized the father and son, brought them outside the house, blindfolded them and put them up against a wall. This done, shots were fired at them, presumably over their heads, after which the bandages were removed from their eyes. During the preliminary processes, the revolver of one of the Crown Forces was shoved into young Halloran's mouth. The armed men then searched the licensed premises of Cleary's and of Holden's in the village. About midnight on Monday, the Crown Forces again appeared in the village and once more called at Halloran's. This time they took the young lad with them and brought him to a house belonging to a family named Jackman. They searched the latter house, threatened Mr. Jackman and said they had a charge against him, that it would be better for him to give up having anything to do with Sinn Féin. At the same time, they examined the beds and asked to know if there were any young men in the house, and on being informed in the negative, they withdrew. Immediately after they went out, five shots were heard, and a voice was heard to cry out, "I'm shot." At the same time, one of the auxiliary police was observed to fall on the ground. This was subsequently adjudged to be a hoax or a ruse, as the examination of the place showed no signs that would lead to the conviction that a human being was shot there. Young Halloran had in the meantime been blindfolded and put with his face to a wall. Hearing the shots and the cry, "I'm shot," he thought it was his father who had been following in his wake who had been struck, and he decided to make a run for us as he thought he'd be next. Tearing the bandage from his eyes, he made a dash for liberty. A hail of lead, however, sped after him and he received two bullet wounds, one in the shoulder and the other in the thigh. He continued to run, however, and scrambled over a fence and took to the country. When things were quiet, he returned to his house, whence he was subsequently removed to the Kilkenny Infirmary, where he subsequently recovered. Now, just to conclude, I think we can see how important the Dáil Courts were in the summer of 1920. In a practical sense, they dispensed justice fairly, if with slightly unorthodox sentences. Perhaps more importantly, though, it showed that those auditioning to be the new government of Ireland were up to the task, and that chaos would not necessarily follow, which had been predicted by those against the Sinn Féin movement. It was also exceptional how quickly these courts were established and accepted within the time frame of just 2 or 3 months in 1920. I think this was down to the fact that most people liked how the law was dispensed by these courts. Just to thank you once again for listening, I hope you enjoyed today's podcast, and don't forget to join your local library to avail of all the fabulous free resources they have. Until next time.